Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour, brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com. I'm your announcer, Miss Jamie Lee of TripleCrownConjure.com in Pensacola, Florida, and in just a moment, we'll be joined by our co-host, Catherine Ironwood of LuckyMojo.com in Forestville, California, and Condiment Ali of ContimentAli.com in Mission Viejo, California. This week, we will be joined by a special guest from the Association of Independent Breeders and Root Workers, Professor Ames of SkullboneEmporium.com in Kansas City, Missouri. Together, y'all, they will take your calls and offer advice to address, ameliorate, and remediate your questions and problems about love, money, career, and spiritual protection, using traditional African-American folk magic practices of hoodoo, conjure, or root work as divined and prescribed by the greatest spiritual hoodooists of our times. You can learn a lot just by listening, but if you're selected from among those who signed up at the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com and called into the show, then you'll be on the air and receive a free consultation. We'll be going to the phones in just a moment, but first, let's catch up with our co-hosts, Miss Kat and Conjurement Ali. And Miss Kat.
Hi, Tammy Lee.
Hi.
Well, I see we're having a little Mercury retrograde action.
Yes, ma'am.
Miss Tammy Lee is not in the chat, and people are like, where's Miss Tammy Lee? Where's Miss Tammy Lee? Mm-hmm. Well, Miss Tammy Lee is vocal right now, but she is not typing yet. Okay, so just bear with us. She'll figure out her way into the chat room, I hope. If not, Papa Noodle will probably channel her mentally and, through hypnotic trance, Papa Noodle will channel her typing, right?
Yes,
I know
ma'am.
He will.
Yes, ma'am.
He's quick with the typing, too.
He's good at that. Okay. All righty. Well, let's see. What's new around here? Let's see. Well, we've got our own little Mercury retrograde issues, needless to say. Strange computer this and that and the others. But, we're handling it. It's not the worst Mercury retrograde we've ever had, but it's in it's actually one of the milder ones, I'd say. It depends on where they fall on my chart, how badly they hurt me. This one is, just a little bit. So, what we're going to do is we're going to be having a talk with Professor Ames, and we're also going to, of course, check in with Conjurement Ali. But first, I would like to say just a couple of little things before we get there. Number one, I want to thank everybody who's been covering for me on the radio show when I've had other things going on, and Brother Lou for teaching that workshop at the Mystic Fair that I was supposed to teach and couldn't make, and Conjurement Ali for helping with the show while I was gone and lining up instant guests and everybody who has participated. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it, and it's been very kind of everyone to do so.
Okay.
And, y'all are great companions of the road with me, and I really do love you all for, sticking by and thick and thin. And it's very, very, very much appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
I'm back again, and we'll see how well I stay here. Okay? All right. Hoping to stick with it again a little bit more. Okay, so let's see. Well, other than that, if I owed you some course books, if you were listening to this and going, where's my course book? I just signed them all today. I had 8 course books to sign, people who signed up for the course, and I couldn't sign them because I was away. So all signed, all good. You're going to get your course book real soon. Now, let's turn it over to Ali. How are you doing today, hon?
I'm doing lovely. It's been, as usual, quite a busy week. It's interesting. I've noticed that every Saturday night I kind of look back and I go, well, what type of work did I do this week? What type of commonalities were there? And there always seems to be a commonality to the work that I do, to the lessons that I kind of learned in the week. And that's very interesting to me. And as a person who works with the idea that there are rhythms and cycles to life, it makes perfect sense. For example, this past week, a lot of clients that I was doing reconciliation work for, or I was doing some type of business work for, they always have minor fluctuations where things get a little bit better, things may not be moving forward as fast as they want, but in the long run, everything is you know, very successful. And the lesson that kind of comes away from this past week is being able to see past the minor fluctuations, see the progress that you've made, and being able to do that is really one of the keys of, you know, not letting yourself fall into panic because you stubbed your toe that day, right? This happens in uncrossing work quite frequently, too. You do uncrossing work for a client. You wake up in the morning and, you know, they you know, hurt their toe or something. Oh, my God, I'm still cross. No, you have to be able to see past the fluctuations, the overall picture. And teaching clients to be able to do that has always been interesting. And I've been able to talk to some of my clients this week and get them to see in that mode, and we've had some wonderful, wonderful successes, especially in terms of reconciliation work this past week. So I've always find it interesting looking back at the themes of the week, what kind of emerges, and what lessons I, you know, have to teach and learn myself.
Yeah, it's a good time to make a review of what's been going on. Like, as soon as I turned this over to you, I realized I had forgotten to mention the November newsletter.
Right.
And my thanks to Ms. Phoenix, who wrote book reviews on some books that we carry in the shop. And very nice work on her part and very gratefully received. And I also have to give a shout-out to Leah Rivera, who... on the October newsletter, she had written some of that, but she said, "Oh, you don't need to put my name on it, but I ought to at least mention her." So, Leah, thank you so much, and Ms. Phoenix, thank you so much for helping out with the newsletter. And it helps to have a little bit of fresh ideas and thoughts. You know, you can listen to me only so long, and before I start to recycle myself, you know. So it was interesting to see what Phoenix had to say about what were the most important books to her in the shop. Now, she comes out of a Wicca witchcraft reclaiming tradition, and of course she said, well, Scott Cunningham's Encyclopedia of Herbs, you know, and Dion Fortune's Psychic Self-Defense, and those were kind of, you know, wow, what an interesting thing. But we also got some other a little bit more unexpected books in that she thought were really interesting, and it was neat. And one of them was a brand new book, the Hollywood Be Thy Name. It's a book on African American religious depictions in African-American films, by which we mean not films made by white people about black people, but films made with all black casts from 1929 to 1949, how they view religion and magic. And we sell some of these old films on DVD in the shop, and particularly The Blood of Jesus and Go Down Death, both of them by Spencer Williams, directed by Spencer Williams, and he's in them too. And this book, Hollywood Be Thy Name, has a whole long exegesis on those two films, which are very important films, plus a third film, which no longer exists. It's one of those lost films, and it only exists in the form of a trailer. And the name of that film, and it's also by Spencer Williams, who made these religio-magical films, that film is called Brother Martin, Servant of Jesus. And that film, although Spencer Williams was a Baptist, that film is about Martin de Porres, who had at that point in the 40s been beatified. And there's a long, because the trailer exists, there's a long explanation of how Spencer Williams kind of buries the Catholic aspect and just says, well, it says on the poster, the story of a Negro who loved Jesus. I mean, what a great title that is. But this kind of goes a ways to explain things like that that old photograph, which I know a lot of you have seen because I've posted on my website, of the St. Martin Spiritual Church in Washington, D.C. that Gordon Parks filmed, the guy who later directed the movie Shaft, which we also carry in the shop. And And so why there was a spiritualist church called St. Martin's, because they were hoping he would be a saint, although he was not at that time. So there's a whole lot of history of Hoodoo's connection to Christianity embedded in those DVDs and in that book, and I just hope people take advantage of it and check it out. It's an interesting history and an interesting reality. And that brings us to contemporary reality, which brings us to Professor Ames, who's our guest.
Welcome, Professor
Ames. Welcome to the show, Professor Ames.
Thank you. Good to be here. Good to be here, as always.
Now, Miss Tammy Lee called you from Kansas City, but you've done moved, haven't you?
I have done moved. Yes, I have. Actually, it was really interesting. Last weekend, I headed back to Kansas City to pick up the last of the things from the house. I thought they were the last things, but, you know, how those things go. And I had the joy of hanging out at Good Luck Conjure Shop with Dr. E, who was giving a wonderful workshop on Santeria Lukumi. And Papa Newt was there. It was great to see him face-to-face. And, of course, Hugon Matt and Mambo Julie were there, as well as lots of other old friends hanging out. It was a really, really great weekend. I was able to teach a little Norman class Saturday night and just have a really good time with lots of barbecue. Dr. E loves his barbecue, I found out.
Mm-hmm.
We had a really great time.
Well, that's really nice. Are you thinking about possibly opening up a shop in Fort Collins, Colorado?
There may have to be a Good Luck West. There may have to be soon. I keep spying little nooks and storefronts that might just be the place to go. We'll see.
Well,
I hope
that does come to pass. I know that it's a place that could stand a little bit of good luck.
So, but you know what? It has a train. It's full of trains here. You probably know that already.
I do. I have
spent
time
right
in
the middle of town.
I could tell you some tales about Fort Collins that would curl your hair, but I'll tell you one. I had a friend who had a room full of finches, okay?
Ooh,
we're talking
okay.
An entire bedroom filled with finches. There was a double airlock kind of door. You'd go in, make sure there were no finches in the airlock, and then you'd go into the room. Entire room full of finches. They do things really wild in Fort Collins.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Can you imagine that? A room full of finches. You had to go in there and
I'm trying not to
on the floor.
Think of that too much.
Yeah. And Tammy Lee says, how did they sleep? The finches had perches running all around. I mean, he had little twigs and things. The question is, how do the people sleep? Because finches are dang loud birds. Tweet, 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 tweet. It was like a bazillion finches, and they were all different species. That was Fort Collins back in the 60s when people lived wild and loose.
My goodness. It certainly calmed down. I didn't notice any finch remnants here in the house. So,
yeah, right.
Scared.
Well... Anyway, well, you brought us a panel discussion, and we're going to go right to it.
Okay.
Professor Ames, traditional versus contemporary uses for hoodoo. Okay? So first of all, set the scene for us. And I just got to say, black cat, yes, zebra finches. Also Javanese rice finches. Okay? Onward. Contemporary versus traditional hoodoo.
Well, on a couple of the forums recently, there were people who, on Facebook, they were talking about astrology. Do you use astrology in hoodoo work or not? And my view of it, and this is where I'd love to have your perspective as well, and I know that Kondanali is also a great astrologer too. I think if you were in the rural South back in the 20s and 30s, your exposure to astrology, by and large, was either Farmer's Almanac, so they used that as well for timing things with the moon, knowing which sign things were in, probably a little bit more, and then what I call scroll astrology. And you know exactly what I'm talking about, how those in vending machines, fortunes, you could get into the late 70s in a grocery store, and they were your sun sign chart and maybe your fortune for the year by month. It was rolled up, this paper rolled up into a little scroll. And so I think that was another way that was probably pop astrology back in the day. Of course.
Well, you know, I'm just going to step in. I'm going to step in here just a little bit. Also, they used to sell them in flat envelopes in a little I used to get them that way from the Usher's House of Usher down in Venice Beach, California. But, you know, they're little pastel envelopes, little pastel scrolls, and they were very good.
Yes.
Professor Seward traveled all around Chicago in his to Atlantic City in his beautiful Studebaker traveling van lined with beautiful carved griffins and walnut, and he would lecture off the back platform of his Studebaker on astrology and give out charts to people. And also, if you talk about, and to rural people, I mean, he'd stop everywhere, but if you talk about African-American hoodoo and astrology, there were two very prominent astrologers who were black back in those days, Dr. E.P. Reed on South Street in Philadelphia, who did charts for people. And he, I have correspondence from him and things from his, you know, all his world. He also sold hoodoo products. I mean, he sold incense and you know, all kinds of things of that nature. He was an all around guy, and he had a number of businesses. One of which is called the Indian Herb Company, but he did a lot of that stuff in Philadelphia. But he sold nationwide. And the other one was Edward A. Lowe, who was an astrologer. He had been born in Texas, but he lived in Chicago. And he was written up in a book describing the Bronzeville district of Chicago, which was the black part of town. And there was a long write-up about him and his astrology. But I also have his dream books and his astrological advertisements. I've collected them over the years. And Edward A. Lowe put out a dream book called The Spiritualistic Dream Book. But he did a lot of astrology, and he advertised in papers, send, you know, so much and I will do your horoscope for you. So there were astrologers who were black. And he also did sold Algiers perfume. In other words, he was also selling hoodoo supplies. So both of these guys were not just astrologers, they were root workers. So just a little bit of fact.
Awesome. That's terrific. So the question kind of came up, you know, how much was it used in what we call traditional root work, and I think my view is that unless you had access to some of these mail order astrological charts and scrolls and so on, the effort, and I've done it, to create an astrological chart by hand is pretty time intensive. You must have ephemeris and the house of a book for houses and all this kind of data, lots of math involved. It's a very intensive process. Of course, in the cities, you had people like, if you read Edward Lowe, Professor Seward, you know, I was fishing for you to talk about him, you know that. And so it really kind of differed one to the other. You know, fast forward to now with, you know, computers, it's very easy for some with some knowledge of how to interpret a chart to cast it pretty easily. So you've got the information that's there. You can change things around. You can move to the future. You can progress charts, all these very fancy calculations, which would have taken days, weeks to calculate by hand. So I think it is making a big influence. I certainly use it a lot. And I kind of wanted to open that up to see how the two of you might use it during consultations, if you use it at all. And when you start to use it as well.
Well, I'm going to speak for myself because I was an astrologer for 22 years as my primary source of income, in addition to everything else I do. But so I kind of got out of astrology when it became computerized because people didn't want to pay for that day and a half's worth of doing the math, and then I would do these hand-painted charts, and I mean, I was really, you know, I had the Prang watercolors, and I had the whole, everything was, you know, scrolled and calligraphed, and you name it. They didn't want to pay for that piece of art anymore that was suitable for framing. They just wanted to go online and get it for free. So I kind of stopped doing astrology, but for money, and I had also, by that time, I had met up with Deacon Millett, and he and I both are astrology freaks, and he sort of carried the torch for me when I dropped it. But I still do astrology. I'll still do a chart on anybody at the drop of a hat, but I'll do it with the computer now. However, there's another aspect of this which has been part of my life ever since I started doing tarot cards, which is the astrological correspondences, especially in the Rider-Waite-Smith tarot or any of the Golden Dawn inspired, like the Crowley deck or anything like that. There are astrological, and also the BOTA, the Builders of the Adytum tarot, and many, many, Oswald Wirth, they all have some kind of astrological occult correspondence and sometimes the Hebrew alphabet too. I became very obsessed with that, and of course, there's the whole question of, you know, whether you switch strength and justice and all that astrological stuff that all the astrological people know what I'm talking about, everyone else will not. But that became very much a part of my root work to use the tarot with astrology. For instance, you hear me on the radio show. Someone calls up and they have a question. I say, well, what sign are you, honey, and what sign is he? You know, I always say that because at least I want to get a quick little fix sun sign wise, but the reason I do it is not just to give them a sun sign reading, although I'm pretty good at that, but to see when the cards come out whether the cards have any relationship to those signs of the zodiac. Because, you know, sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. So that's one of the ways I use astrology. Another way, I always was taught, never start anything during eclipse. Never start anything when the moon is void, of course. Never start anything when Mercury is retrograde if it involves travel or speech or language or writing. And I live by those rules. This, we got hit with a real whammy, Mercury retrograde, eclipse, you name it. I don't start things. I finish things when those things are up. So that's how I use it in my daily practice. Mm-hmm. But I don't consider myself a contemporary astrologer. I consider myself an astrologer kind of stuck around 1917 to 1937. You know what I'm saying?
Of course.
That's just me. What about you, Ollie? Do you work with the stars?
I do. I do quite frequently, actually. You know, two services that are probably the most popular with my Middle Eastern clients and probably what I'm known best for in the Middle East, in addition to my work with the jinn and exorcism, is geomancy and astrology. I don't offer astrology very often to, you know, everyone. It's not something that I give as a regular service. It's usually a retainer service. You know, Kat, we talked about just recently, I was flown out to Las Vegas where I met with a business client and spent the entire day doing nothing but astrology and geomancy charts, and he was a Middle Eastern client from Dubai. So I do astrology quite a bit, and I think it's contextual for me about which clients I do it for. But even in my everyday root work practice, so there's people I cast charts for and I do interpretations for, and I come from a different school of thought. I do Arabian astrology, which is very close to medieval and Renaissance with some slight differences. We emphasize the moon a lot more. We look at the mansions of the moon as well. A couple other things, we're focused a little bit more on predictive astrology versus, psychoanalysis, if you will. Yeah, psychoanalysis. And I'm trained in actually the traditional arts of astrology, like the traditional schools. So I can do horary astrology, electional astrology. I can also do medical astrology and, you know, mundane astrology and natal astrology. Mundane astrology is usually used for, like, predicting political events and earthquakes and whatnot. But in my personal practice, I use astrology quite frequently, even if I'm not directly talking about it to the client. Finding out the client's sun sign can determine the type of work I may recommend to them, depending on what sign they are, depending on what element that sign is associated with, whether it's a water sign or an earth sign. That may shape the recommendations that I give. Am I going to be focusing more on prescribing baths? Or am I going to be focusing more on working with powders if they're an earth sign or dirts, as well as if I'm consulting about how to influence someone, I'm always looking at the very least at four things: sun, moon, Venus, Mars. If I'm not doing a whole chart, at the very least looking at those four things can help me not only make some very strong predictions about a relationship, but as well as determine what can be done, you know, how to influence a person. Where a person's Mars is can determine the approach you take to that person. Where a person's Venus is, you know, there's a variety of different ways to use astrology, and I do use it quite frequently, even if I'm not explicitly talking about it with clients. If I'm not actually saying, oh, let me cast your chart, at the very least I'm looking at their birth date, I'm looking at their signs, and it is factoring into the things that are going in my mind and what I'm saying. So quite a bit of astrology in my work.
Yeah, I do a lot of relation ship astrology, like you mentioned, and also elective. Deacon Millett really does a lot of relationship astrology, and he has made a big deal of that. I really got into electional when I was young, and I liked it a lot. They just had a lot of fun for me, picking the best wedding day, picking the best day to move, you know, things like that.
Uh-huh. It's also considered to be one of the oldest branches of astrology, along with what you can call mundane astrology. They say that when we look at the history of astrology, when we go back to Mesopotamian and Babylonian, those would be the two types of astrology that was most common and therefore can be the root of every other astrology. Electional astrology, when a ritual or rite to the gods was supposed to be done, and mundane astrology, you know, predicting when the next king is going to come, when the next flood is going to be, when, you know, things like that. So those are the two oldest branches, too.
Right. What about you, Professor Ames? And, I mean, do you consider astrology to be modern in hoodoo? Because in hoodoo in the past, I mean, there was basically what you got was moon sign, moon phases, and moon void, of course, and eclipses, and sun signs. Now, I got to explain here, too. These were not just in farmer's almanacs, but if you all have the black folder, you'll see that there's a baking soda pamphlet that came in a box of baking soda, and it's got it all in there too, you know. I mean, and hoodoo supply stores, like there's a thing there from the O&B Standard Company. They were selling sun sign based or astrological based perfumes, candle colors, you name it. The black folder really has a good assortment showing some of that older stuff. So it wasn't just farmer's almanacs, because everybody could have access to it. Do you think of astrology as having increased in its influence in hoodoo since, say, the 1940s, or do you think it's about the same?
I think it has shifted. I think you can look back, and you'll have a lot of sun sign astrology work. You know, I think of Amrit Gamash, and, you know, that's all about, you know, anointing your candle with the right astrological oil, right? You do living candle spells. I think where it's changed, and you kind of hit the nail on the head, as you always do, you know, it's so easy now for people to access their charts and all. So why do something complicated? Well, if you can do something that only a computer can do and use that as a tool, all the better. So I can now use astrology more. I almost always, if I can get someone's natal chart and their partner's, you know, I can look at and say, well, how does this relationship actually work? What's the dynamic? Where is their the other person's Venus in relation to this person's Mars, and all these kind of dynamics? And you start to understand what's kind of the underlying relationship. Two of the things that I do that are only, well, one's only been around since the advent of computers is astrocartography. So that's looking at taking your birth chart and mapping it onto the world, right? So where is a better place for you to live? What happens if I move to California versus New York? And I find that a really fascinating study because, as a double Capricorn, I'm very practical about these things and where people live. And you can also relocate. And so if someone has a bad chart, if they've got Saturn in their second house, and they've always got money problems, what happens if they move west a little bit? Does that move to the third house? So then that frees up some of the money perhaps. So I think there are a lot of aspects because we can generate charts and look at them so quickly and compare them and look at large numbers of information that it is something that has changed in that way. I still think it's a choice for a person to decide what works best for them, what speaks to them. I will usually use astrology as sort of a background information. You know, if someone says, oh, my God, I'm crossed up, then I'll look and say, well, you know, Saturn's passing through your first house. This may just be something that you're going to have to wait out, right? If I don't see those things, I go, okay, well, let's look at the cards and see if somebody's throwing at you. Let's look at some other signs and other divination methods in conjunction with astrology to get more about events, more about timing, more of those sort of things. That's mostly how I use it.
Well, I tend to agree with you that the computer stuff has made it easier to get more and more deeply textured charts quicker. Back in the day, it took me an hour and a half to do, you know, just to get the basic data out of the pile, you know what I mean? But I got very good after, I have one of those mathematical minds or visual mathematical minds where I could take an ephemeris with the rows of columns, you know, which is, for those who don't know, an ephemeris gives the sighting of where that planet will be at a given time. Usually it'll be Greenwich Mean Time, 00 Greenwich Mean Time. And then I have to do the computation from Greenwich Mean Time, which is England to California or wherever I am or wherever the person's birth is or whatever. I got pretty good. I could get just sort of, you know, you'd kind of, after you've done it enough, like hundreds of charts, you can kind of look at that row of columns. You see how fast that planet is moving at that time, and you can predict it really close. I mean, you can get within a degree or two on a fast planet or, I mean, within a few seconds on a slow-moving planet. So I could actually throw together a chart in about 30 seconds if I had to. That would be pretty darn good. Maybe just compute the moon if I was, you know, if it was moving at the time. You know what I'm saying? But the rising sign, I got to the same thing. I could just like spin. You're born in Iceland at 2 a.m. You're rising. You know, but you just have to kind of. Some people have a head for it and some don't. And I was pretty good at that. So, but I did love the computer. When the computer came in, it certainly changed. It made it a lot easier for me and much more depth, much more texture. Venus and Mars, all those other things could be added in. I like to look at the rising sign too, but most people don't know their birth time. So there we go. We can only estimate. And I also have to say that doing astral candles, I want to mention that for a minute. Astral candles, again, go back way back. I mean, in 1942, Henri Gamache is writing about astral candles. And what those are is a candle that is dipped and coated with two colors of wax and herbs and minerals that go with two different signs. And one half will usually be the sun, and the other half will be the rising sign. Could also be the moon sign if you don't have the rising sign. So it's a two-color candle, or maybe a one-color candle, and usually those would use, you know, there's a couple of major astrological color schemas, and I happen to use what's called a prism scheme or the you know, wheel of color scheme. So you just work out what it is, and you can use those astral candles to represent somebody. If you don't have a figural candle or you don't have anything of them, it's a link to them. It really is a link to them if you can know their sun and moon. You can also use astral candles as helper candles if an astrological aspect is happening right now. Let's say Venus is conjunct Mars right now. I might make a Venus-Mars in whatever sign candle, astral candle. So I will take the candle for the sign, and then I'll wrap it in herbs and minerals that go with Venus, herbs and minerals that go with Mars, half and half, or even splingly decor it, because Venus and Mars, we want them to be a little more intimately mixed, right? And I have now made a prepared astral candle for this day, right, for now, and then I'll do a big old sex and love spell. I'd done that stuff for years, I would not call it old school hoodoo, because old school hoodoo didn't even use that many candles, mostly roots. You know, the candles came in more after emancipation and more after World War I, when the paraffin wax became more common.
Right.
So that's my take on it. I don't hold with people though who say, "Well, those old time guys didn't know nothing about astrology." That is not the case, and you can. You know, read interviews with older folks. And like, for instance, if you read Mary Alicia Owen's book, Voodoo Tales as Told Among the Negroes of the Southwest, great title, it means no sense. Voodoo Tales as Told Among My Family's Ex-Slaves in Missouri. That's what the book should have been titled. Right? But they are all about the moon, and she collected from her own family's slaves, and then she went back as an adult when they were no longer slaves, but some of them still lived and worked on the family property. And they talked about the moon and the moon this, the moon that, and they were using Cherokee or other Native American names for the moon. They'd say, well, this is the corn moon, and this is the corn tassel moon, and this is the hunting moon. So they obviously had a Native American moon sign astrology worked out that they were using in conjunction with African-derived hoodoo. It was a mix, and anyone can see it in her book. And it's also one of the most interesting things about her book, because she wanted to prove that she was collecting hoodoo from African American. She kept on saying, "Oh, this person is this. He's a pure member of the African race." And then this person would say things like, "And now you go out during the pollen moon or whatever." You're like, wait a minute. So she kind of tipped the hand that there was actually much more going on. And they have little stories, you know, like how Rabbit caught the moon in a pool. That's a Native American story. So, Kelly Mojo Girl asks, was candle magic popular with West Africans before they brought their spiritual practices to the U.S.? Nope, because they didn't have. I could give you a whole history of candle. Buy my book, The Art of Hoodoo Candle Magic, and you'll find out. The answer to that is no, okay, in 25 words or less.
Yeah. Oil and fire magic did have. They were usually made out of palm oil, was a common thing that they used in a gourd, but not candle magic. But they did have fire magic, they did have oil lamps, but not candles. Nope.
Candle magic pretty much entered hoodoo on account of Jews, and I explain it all in the book. And probably the two biggest Jewish contributions to African-American hoodoo are the Psalms and the candles. There are other things, the Jews just went along for the ride. Those two, they kind of said, hey, look at this. And as urbanization was happening and black people were in the cities shopping with Jewish pharmacists, they kind of went, hey, that's cool. So hoodoo is a mixture, but it is a mixture that is held, preserved, and developed by African Americans. Just like white people borrow from black culture can borrow from other cultures, so don't be surprised. Yeah, and Shiva put out the link, jewsinhoodoo.html at luckymojo.com. You'll get a trip if you read that. That's a little wild ride for some people. We better go to our callers. My gosh, this is a wonderful subject, and I could rave about it. You just got to stop me sometime, because I'll tell you, I get so tired of everybody telling me what hoodoo used to be and what hoodoo is now and what it became. And all you got to do is just look, read the old newspaper accounts, read the old novels, read the old catalogs, read the old books. You don't need an anthropologist to know which way the wind blows, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Well, let's turn it over to Miss Tammy Lee, and she's going to bring in some callers, and we're going to do some readings.
Yes, ma'am, Miss Kat. And y'all, we have about 53 minutes left in today's Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour. And the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with your hosts, Catherine Ironwood and Conjamin Ali, and this week's special guest, Professor Ames of SkullboneEmporium.com in Fort Collins, Colorado. We'll be right back. We'll be taking calls from our listeners, answering their questions through spiritual divination and prescribing down-home conjure remedies and remediation. Our call-in clients are selected from among those who have filled out a short questionnaire at the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com. You can listen to the show online through Blog Talk Radio or via telephone by dialing 818-394-8535. And if you have filled out a client questionnaire at the forum, please dial in now to 818-394-8535 and press 1 to let us know that you're available to be on the air. We will select callers by their area code, and if your area code is announced, we'd like for you to say hello. And let me, your announcer, Ms. Tammy Lee, read a brief description of your situation before turning it over to our hosts. Now it's time to go to our first client, and our first client is a new client, not only a new client, but a new caller to the show and certainly new to our panel, and calling in from area code 516. This is Palombina. Are you there, caller?
Yes, I'm here.
Great. Did I pronounce your name correctly, ma'am?
Close. Palombina.
Palombina. Okay, great. Thank you so much. And she writes, late spring, I met a guy online through a mutual friend. Despite myself, I found myself growing attracted to his conversations. After much persistence on his part, I agreed to meet him in person, and 5 hours flew by so quickly. We met again a week later, and again, the conversation was great, never a dull moment, and so much compatibility and chemistry. Then he got very busy with work, and we still did text and haven't seen him since then. We made tentative plans a few times, but then a work project came up, and he would have to cancel. I'm pretty direct and blunt and don't like to play guessing games and wonder if that maybe scared him a bit. He's younger than me, and I'm not sure if I might have intimidated him. I would love to get past this, and rekindle our romance and see where it goes, hoping a reading will shed some light on what's really going on and if I should not give up on him and us. Turning it back over to you.
All right. Now, speaking of astrology, Palombina, what is your sign of the zodiac?
I'm a Gemini.
A Gemini. All right. Mm-hmm. And what is his sign of the zodiac?
He's a Taurus.
That's interesting. Now, I'm going to tell you straight up, the Tauruses tend to be the steady ones, and Geminis tend to be the flighty ones. But here you are looking to see if you can get a little bit more action from him. Okay, I'm going to do three cards and see what we get. And all right. Well, what I get is not too good for this relationship. The first card I have is the Six of Pentacles. Pentacles would be his suit, but because he's an earth sign. And this shows a man who has a scale, a balance beam scale, and he has two beggars, and he is kind of distributing coins unevenly, like he's not being fair, but he pretends to be fair. I believe that at the time when he got together with you, he had someone else on the side. He was distributing his... he may say no, but I'm saying yes. He was distributing his attention unequally. The next card I have, and it's funny, all three of these cards that I laid out are pentacles, so this is mostly about him and not so much about you. The next card is the Knight of Pentacles. And this is a man on a horse dressed in armor, and he is not moving forward. His horse is at a dead standstill, facing forward, but not going anywhere. This man has in the distance two oak trees that are like a symbol for a cooperative union of marriage, business partnership. He does want a solid partnership. He may not think you're the one. He may have chosen without saying so. He also does have work in his way because this horse has plowed and plowed and plowed acres of fields. He has brought this relationship to a stop. The third card is a real strange one. It's the Ten of Pentacles. And this shows three generations of people, a man and a woman, a child, and an old guy with a couple of dogs. And they're in a courtyard, lots of money and some grapes, and just the prosperous life, the good life, as it might have been lived in Tuscany in the 1500s. Just a real nice card. It says to me that if he had somebody else going on, he may have decided on a family with that person or land with that person, or it may have to do with work and moving up in his job description too, because money is part of this, but it's about money, land, family. So my sense of it is, I know you don't want to play guessing games. I think he has trying to keep you on the string, because no Taurus ever likes to sleep alone. And I'm not saying the man's a player, but I think he might be gone by now. Let's turn it over to Professor Ames and see what he has to say.
I'm reading the Lenormand cards, and I initially drew a row of five. The center card of that is the tree. The tree can play a couple different roles. It was very interesting that cats. You came up with the idea of this, the oak trees in the distance and everything. It will often talk about family. It will often talk about, most often about health. But I feel that here, it's also your view of the relationship, that you may have that sense of, you know, we're soulmates, we're meant to be together, and so on. The first two cards are sort of our information coming into it. The sun is early success. The letter is about communication. No doubt. You know, especially being a Gemini, here we'll tie this in, you know, you're very sensitive to talk, to communication, how important that really is for making something connect together. On the other side of that, kind of as we're going forward, We have the Rider and we have the Fish. There again is your money card. There is definitely something driving him about money. That didn't tell me enough. So through three additional cards, and there's the Snake, there's the other woman. The Clover, which is luck. The Bear, which relates often to family, but also to big finances. There he is. There's that theme. Just picking up from what Kat was saying, there is something definitely Taurian there about finance, money, security, success, that's driving him. What he's not telling you is that there is something else with this woman. And I feel this woman is somehow lucky for him toward his financial success.
That's what I got.
Using her, or she's an influential person that can open doors for him for his career. Because I've got the Snake, which is the woman, the Clover, which is luck. Luck on his side, and the Bear. Bear is always big finance, manager, CEO type position, something that she can provide for him. So I think he's looking in a very practical way about his future. I don't want to minimize that he does have some affection for you, but he's being very practical right now about what's near to him and what's possible for him.
All right, well, let's see what Ollie has to say. And I just want to put a little shout-out to Coastside Conjure. She said, boss's daughter. I wasn't going to quite go there, and I saw Ames didn't quite go there either, but kind of. I mean, it may not be the boss's.
I was wondering that. A lot of what you both said right now, it does make sense. He's everything was good with us until he got bombarded with work, which is great for him because he's very he's trying to make it in his field. He's in the entertainment field, and he got a lot of projects, and that took up a lot of his time. And he was working on a movie, money is important for him because he doesn't have. It's just he's the only son, the only child, and his parents are in a little bit of a financial bind. His father got sick, so
he's got
a lot of that stuff on his shoulders. And he is very stressed out.
Yeah, what we're seeing is that that he has made a different choice. Let's see what Ollie has to say. We've got a couple of minutes left here, and what does he have to say?
You know, I was reading along with Kat and Professor Ames, and they really have hit the nail on the head. One thing that I will add, just a little bit of astrology here, is that when Geminis and Tauruses, you know, kind of come together, stimulating conversation certainly happens. But stimulating conversation means something different to a Gemini than it does a Taurus, right?
Mm-hmm.
For Gemini, it can be quite building of emotions and affections. And now that's not saying he doesn't have any feelings for you. But the sense I'm getting is that his feelings were a little bit more in its infancy than yours was, where you're like, all right, let's see where this goes. He's going, oh, she was interesting. She's cool. But here's this other woman with all these other things. And more often than not, Tauruses will pick security and stability over conversation. Okay, just something to bear in mind there, okay?
Okay.
If you're going to go forth and try to draw this man to you, you certainly can. But be aware that it's going to be quite difficult. If you're going to try to do, as you ask, what can I do to rekindle our kind of romance, be careful because Tauruses are extraordinarily stubborn. In fact, people talk about Aries being stubborn. I argue that the most stubborn sign is Taurus. More than typical, more than Aries. Once a Taurus decides that they're going to go do something or they're headed down a path, nothing will stop them. So it's very hard to get them to go, nope, reverse directions, come back. So do this very clearly with a deadline. My recommendation is don't spend more than about 2 months on this situation, if that.
Oh, my gosh. Give it 2 weeks.
Well, I want to give you, I was being a little gentle there. If that. 2 months, if that. Do your work, and then if you don't get him to return, walk away, because once he's down that path, once he's gone far enough, it's hard to pull a Taurus back. And I'm telling you this as a person who is a Taurus and a person who's done a lot of work on Taurus. What I would recommend in a situation like this is lots and lots of incense work. His communication was involved with you guys. Taking his photo, writing his name three times, your name three times over, turning it, crossing it with your name and around it, come to me, desire me, want me, speak to me, okay? And an unbroken circle around your name. And you're going to set that on some return to me incense that you've added a pinch of tobacco to, okay? And you're going to light that. What that will do, and you're going to keep lighting the incense so that it burns up the paper and it turns to ash. And you're going to call out his name as the incense is going on. You're going to say his name three times. And you're going to keep saying it. Three times is usually what I do, but you can keep saying it until you feel his spirit respond. You'll feel it. You'll feel there's a shift. You'll feel that he opens up. You'll feel that it's like he's listening. His spiritual ears perk up. And then you speak to him. And you go, so-and-so, you miss our conversations, come back to me. So-and-so, your heart is growing warmer to me. As this incense sparks, the sparks of our love continue to spark. And you're going to keep calling to him and do that over a period of days while you work some other magic, like a honey jar to sweeten him to you. I personally would do a sugar jar or a sugar bowl versus a honey jar in this particular case. That will work a little bit better. I think sugar is going to be good in this particular situation. If you can shake up that sugar, if you make a sugar jar with the love herbs in there and you shake that up while you call to him and you're working that incense, that will be a good foundation for doing some return to me work. But again, do it with a clear deadline, because I also get a very strong sense that this has already gone pretty far and maybe just out of your magical reach.
Really? I just got to say one more thing here. And when that doesn't work, and when that doesn't work, you're a Gemini. You have, you know, the gift of eternal youth and sparkle and charm. Go find another one. I'm just going to say it. And call us back on the next one, and we'll give you another free reading, okay? Because I don't, you know, this is, the guy's dug in. He's a Taurus. You know, he ain't coming back. Geminis are so charismatic and charming. You'll find someone real quick. And you'll be fine.
No, no, I know, that's why I was like, let me call, because I know I started a honey jar and I was going to do, because I was wondering, and
hey,
he
when Mercury
there's nobody
turns,
else.
Listen,
but,
whoa, we don't have a lot more time, so I can't hear your whole story, but I'm going to tell you one more thing. When Mercury turns direct, ditch it all, move on, okay?
Okay.
Good
ditch
point.
It all and move on. Mercury turns direct, you're free of this whole thing, just go, okay?
That's her ruler.
All righty. Okay.
All right.
We got to go because we got to have somebody else. But good luck to you, baby.
All right. Thank you so much.
I was just informed by Dr. Shiva that Mercury turns direct on November 10th. There you go.
November 10th. Okay.
Walk on.
All right.
Last day is November 9th. November 10th, walk on.
Okay.
All righty. Let's turn it over to Ms. Tammy Lee.
Well, yes, ma'am, Ms. Kat, and y'all, we have about 38 minutes approximately left in today's show, and support for this program is provided by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and located online at luckymojo.com, and by the Association of Independent Readers and Root Workers, AIR, a directory of ethical and authentic conjure practitioners, located online at readersandrootworkers.org. And by the Crystal Silence League, a free online prayer service of missionary independent spiritual churches, located online at crystalsilenceleague.org. Now it's time to go to the phones and take our next client. And our next client is new to the forum, new to the show, and new to our wonderful panel members from AIR this evening. And she is calling in from area code 810. 810, are you there, caller? L?
I'm sorry, Ms. Tammy, but that individual has dropped out of our phone queue, so we'll have to go to the next one, and that'll be area code 240 instead.
Sure. Yes, sir. Thank you so much, Nagashiva, and let me just go ahead and pull that up, y'all. There we go. This is Jindala. Are you there, caller? Jindale, thank
Hello.
You so much. Hi.
Hi.
Jindale, okay, welcome to the show. I'm going to go ahead and let our panel know that thank you so much for being a loyal listener and that you called in actually last August and that you are actually one of Ms. Kat's clients. So go ahead and let her know that. And she writes, I've been doing breakup work on my friend and her BF, I think, is boyfriend. And want to see how it is affecting them. If not, what are the blockages, and what can I do to remove them and break them up? Turning it back over to you.
All righty. Let's ask a question, because not everyone's going to understand this. You've been doing breakup work on your friend and her boyfriend. This friend, what is your relationship to the friend?
She's my best friend, and I just really get really bad vibes from her boyfriend. He's very manipulative and controlling, and she's turned into a completely different person ever since she started dating him.
Okay, gotcha. All righty. Well, let's have Ollie do the first reading. And what I'm going to say about this, too, is that you might want to do some strengthening work on her as well as trying to break them up. But Ollie, take it away.
Yeah, I'm looking into my carnelian ring, which contains my spirit of divination. I'm scrying with this spirit to take a look at this situation. And I can tell you, first and foremost, that your work is successful to some degree. I have here a lightning storm. Seeing clouds with that flash and crackle. You're causing a storm. You're causing tension. You're causing fighting. But I see that the sun peers through these clouds, and there is now the relationship seems to be repairing itself quite frequently. Be careful, because the sense I'm getting, and looking into this and my spirit is confirming it, is that you're now moving into a state where you're going to cause a cycle for them. And that can actually, you know, keep them in a relationship much longer, where they break up and make up, break up and make up, rekindling their relationship every single time after big breakups, and this can become very, very addicting. The waters that are underneath these clouds are very, very deep. There's a lot of emotional issues here, and a lot of these emotional issues can lead to a sort of borderline personality, you know, relationship. They can lead to addictive relationship tendencies, where she will become dependent on him, and he will become dependent on her, and they will become dependent on the drama, so that the cycle kind of intensifies what's going on. That, yeah, you're causing them to fight, but then they're making up. And it's almost as if that tension becomes the glue that binds them. It becomes an unhealthy, dangerous relationship. I also would caution you about the type of work that you're doing, because it does seem to be having a very serious impact on her more than her. She seems to be very down. I see a woman that is mourning. I see a woman that is covered in a veil. A lot of her own personal demons seem to be coming to the surface with this type of work. So be very careful in the work that you do. And I do see here a blizzard. I think the shift should be that you should probably start doing what I call cold breakup work if you want to separate these two things, to minimize his influence, things to deaden the communication, things to kind of draw them apart versus causing them, tension. Just be careful about the way you approach it, because right now there is some serious tension into it. I also get the impression that this man can be verbally abusive. His tongue is sharp and forked. So be careful, because if you start a lot of tension between them, the words he says is going to hurt her a lot. So you are having an effect, but it may not be the effect that you wanted to have. And that's what my scrying is showing me, okay?
Okay, yeah, you're dead on, because she always told me that he says very mean and hurtful things to her if she doesn't agree with him, or she doesn't bend over backwards for him.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do the second reading, and it'll be very brief. So this is a three-card cut. First card I have is the Ace of Swords. And this is a card that says, pursue justice, but do not pursue revenge. Separate the light from the dark. Separate good from evil, and God will bless you. There is, however, some other material here. There is a palm frond of victory, which means you will have a victory, but maybe with some martyrdom. And on the other side of this crown that's suspended over the sword is an olive branch. Always pursue peace. In other words, keep peace with your friend foremost, even if you seek to separate them. You may find that the work you're doing is separating them, but be prepared that there may be some sacrifices here and that there may be a little bit of difficulty. The next, and if you put them under attack as a couple, it's the same thing that Ollie said. They will bond with one another. The next card is a card that is called the Eight of Swords, and this shows a woman. I sighed because I just hate this card. This shows a woman tied and bound. She doesn't see what's happening here. A woman is tied and bound, standing outside of a castle. She is somewhat held hostage in the situation. You may try to go in and free her, but she may also, like many people who are in bad relationships, may sort of stay in it. The third card, however, is the Tower, which tells us that this relationship will come to an end, and rather explosive end at that. The Future card shows lightning striking the Tower and people jumping for their lives. So be careful that any work you do is done very calmly, and exactly what Ollie said, cold work. Do not use flame or fire to separate them, because he could become violent, for instance. But use waters to separate them. Use washes. And I mentioned earlier, strengthen her courage, strengthen her resolve. She feels the relationship has, like you said, deformed her personality and made her a hostage to a bad situation. What you want to do is to get her out of that bad situation and strengthen her. Okay? Let's see what Ames has to say as far as what kind of root work can be prescribed.
It's interesting. I'll use Lenormand cards to prescribe some root work. And here I have the Ship, which usually indicates a moving away, also anything to do with water, as was recommended. The Mice nibble away, right? So it's not going to be a big thing. It needs to be that slow kind of breakup. It's exactly what Ali and Kat have been describing. And the last part is the dog. The dog is the trusted friend. So what I'm seeing in my head as a root work solution, there's a conjoined candle, a male and a female. They're back to back, but it's made as one candle. And that's used for breakup work. And typically what you do is you'll put a knife down and you'll cut it apart, right, and then start moving them apart, right? The question is, what are you moving them toward? And I think taking off on what Kat and Ali were saying, if she doesn't have anything to draw her toward, if there's not something better than him, she's just going to keep running back to him, right, because they're in that sort of cycle of, messiness. I don't know any better word. That sort of cycle of coming back, break up, and come back together. So you, as her friend, have got to be part of that magnet that's drawing her away from it. I wouldn't light these. I would use them as figures. So cut them apart, separate them, anoint her candle with, I would highly recommend something like clarity oil, something that brings calm to her mind. Balm of Gilead, lavender would all be good to kind of coat her candle with and create a path. I like to use sachet powders, and this could be road opener. It could be success. I think clarity would be good, and start moving them apart. Put something at the far end. I would make a petition. Things that you know about her, that she's got all these things in her life, family, friends, future relationship, work, all these things, wrap that petition paper around a magnet or a lodestone, right, so that she will just edge closer and closer and closer to this thing that's drawing her, to this idea of success. For him, okay. I would eventually just move him off, and I think the idea of cold work is really good. Throw that into a container and throw him in the freezer. You know, you've got to stop him. Mm-hmm. Got to be stopped. Mm-hmm. It's enough to move him away from her, but then he's got to stop being able to lash back out intellectually, verbally, and grab her back in as she's sort of moving away.
Mm-hmm.
If I can just add something to that.
Because I've been using a lot of heat work, like with fire and...
Well, that tower is going to be your undoing if you do that.
Yeah.
That tower shows these people. I mean, it's a good outcome if no one gets hurt or dies. So we have a man who's a little on the explosive side. We might want to make a freezer spell. I think Ames is right on with that one. Something, what Ollie said, too.
I was going to say, put his tongue in the freezer because a lot of this man's power comes from his ability to speak, his ability to harm her, as well as his ability to draw her back in with his words. His tongue has a lot of influence over her, so putting his tongue specifically in the freezer to stop his power, both to hurt and to draw her back, is going to help you a great deal. So I think going dead on with that is freeze his tongue.
Yeah.
And
some courage, some courage for her. Madam Nadia mentioned this. I mentioned this too. You might want to do a little bit of a skull candle for her. Mix clarity oil and crucible of courage oil together. And you can work with her skull candle, and you can set it afire later if you want. Some people just work with a regular old skull, and I've had people tell me they had good success with, like, one of those crystal skull vodka skulls.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, hold it and talk to it, you know, like Alas Poor Yorick, I knew him well. You know, you just hold the thing in your hand and pet her and, you know, baby her along. You know, honey, you will have courage to speak. You will have courage. I like to use a skull candle. The oils kind of move nicely on the wax.
Mm-hmm.
I just tell her, you will have the courage of your convictions. You will have the courage to stand up for yourself, because she's a little bit oppressed by this man. Okay?
Okay.
And Conjure Manali said, if it's a skull bottle, you can load it easily. So true.
Oh, yeah.
You could put sugar and her, you know, something of her name and stuff in that little skull bottle, and then, you know, you burn a little candle on the top of it or whatever you want. Crystal Head Vodka is the name of it, says Miss Michael, which is true,
and
that's a good
Marie
one.
Said,
but something to help her.
And all
okay,
Marie
thank you so much.
Drop him into a river. Once it's frozen in the container, you can just take that frozen candle and the ice around it, and drop it into a river, and let him float away.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You got to get him out of the picture. All right. Good luck, hon. All right, Miss
okay.
Tammy Lee. Let's go to our next client.
Yes, ma'am, Miss Kat. And y'all, the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour is the first show of its type ever to be made available to the public, and it remains the longest-running folk magic radio show to date. Listen by telephone or listen to the archive, podcast, and iTunes. Either way, you're going to love it. To be selected to be on the air, sign up at the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com. Then dial 818-394-8535 during the show and press the number 1 to let the host know that you're available to be on the air. If your call is chosen, you will get a free reading and rootwork consultation with your hosts, Catherine Ironwood of LuckyMojo.com and Conjurement Ali of ConjurementAli.com. And this week's special guest from AIR, we have Professor Ames of SkullBoneEmporium.com in Fort Collins, Colorado. Tune in every week at 3 p.m. Pacific and 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour. Now it's time to go to our next client. And our next client is calling in from area code. This is Daniela. This is from area code 517 and the city of North Hollywood. Daniela, are you there, caller?
I am. Hello.
Hi. Welcome to the show.
Hi,
I'm going to go ahead and my screen went a little bit blank, but it's my understanding from what you posted in the forum that you're a return caller from February or March. Is that correct?
Yes, it was February. February the 3rd, actually.
Super duper. Okay, great. So I just wanted to let our host know that. And as I interpret your post in the forum, that things have changed since the callback, and she writes, she's got a love life inquiry, also whether or not it's best to choose unstable but fun work over stable crappy work, rather. So whether it's unstable work or crappy work that is stable, okay, y'all? Whether or not on the appropriate path with the actual career in entertainment, that's why she originally moved to North Hollywood. Turning it back over to you.
Okay. Well, hon, Danielle, we can only do one question, and since, except for the words love life inquiry, everything else was about your career, so we're going to choose and go with career. One question per reading, okay?
Okay,
so this reading is going to be started by Professor Ames, okay?
Okay, so I take it you're currently in the quote, fun but crack fun work, yes?
Yes. Do you want me to like
so you're doing the fun
that?
Work.
Yeah,
okay.
I get it depends. It's like promotional stuff. And it pays very good, but it's like kind of sporadic.
Okay. I drew 5 cards here, Mormon cards. I knew this was gonna be about work. The first card is the Fox card. That's my work card. And the scythe follows it. So that is about ending whatever the current job is. The center card here is the ring. That's about long terms, enduring contracts and agreements, things that last a long time. Then I have the woman card, the coffin card, which is about endings. So I think it's going to be difficult for you to end this, because I see that you, below that, have three more cards. The Mice, which are worried, I think you've got some worries about whether you can be successful in this. It's followed by the Book, which is about things that are hidden or secretive. So I think those are a lot of things that you keep hidden, that you're unsure about it. So I'm feeling like it's not so much about fun versus crappy work. I think it's about whether you feel confident in that work or not. The Books will also indicate that some study, some research is important. And the last card there is a dog. The dog is the trusted friend. So find someone in the business. You probably already know them. A trusted friend is usually somebody that's already known to you. And get on it. I think that this idea of fun versus crappy work is more your perception of it, because you're trying to avoid the hard work for success. It's not. I've been in the entertainment business. You start at the lowest rung always, but that's where you learn the business.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's actually weird. It's like three things. Like the two jobs that I'm struggling between are actually not with acting at all. And then the third one is, so like the reason I moved here is the acting. But I'm just like, I just want to make sure I'm keeping a roof over my head.
Well, and I think that's fine to take some of that work. But I think a little of it is yourself holding yourself back. Find a mentor in the business. Find someone who's been there and see how they make that balance happen in their lives.
Okay.
Does that make sense for you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ali, what do you see?
You know, I've pulled a cast geomantic chart here to take a look and see what would be the best route for you. And there are a couple things that stand out very strongly. First, we have the right. In the right witness, we have Rubius. Rubius is a bit of a problem. It does indicate what Professor Ames was talking about. Some of this problem does stem from within a little bit, the nervousness about where you're headed, also about kind of upsetting the balance of your life and upsetting where things will go, picking a path that eventually will lead to ruin. So Rubius is dangerous, and it means, you know, it's good you're getting a reading on this, and it's good that you're asking for clarity, and you should keep asking for clarity. But I get the sense that, you know, don't be afraid to follow your dreams or follow something that is fun. A career doesn't need to be crappy, right? And just because something is unstable, now this is odd coming from a Taurus. I love stability, Whaley. But just because there isn't stability in a career doesn't mean that it is not worthwhile pursuing. And we see this in the 10th house, which is the house of careers. We have Puella. Puella is the image of a young girl or a mirror. It says, pursue the thing that attracts you most. Pursue the thing that is going to bring you the most satisfaction. But it is also a gear that is of Libra, and it is about balance and harmony. So it says, do so, but do so with a plan. Right? Don't just throw everything, abandonment to the wind, go, you know what, I'm going to just risk it all. No, go for the career that interests you, go for the career that you desire, the one that you're already kind of leaning towards a little bit, but also make sure that you have backup plans, make sure that you're also established. I mean, we see this with the judge. The judge is conjunctio. Conjunctio is adjoining. You may very well need to have two jobs here. You may very well have one that you're kind of pursuing. It's an unstable career. Going down a road where the money isn't steady, but it is fulfilling, and it has the potential to become something lucrative, while on the side you have something part-time that is a little bit more stable. So don't be afraid of taking, you know, two jobs here. Don't feel like there needs to be a dichotomy, that you have to only pursue one. And conjunctio definitely talks about what Professor Ames mentioned, is an alliance. That you should seek out alliances. Conjunctio is a union. Find people who will assist you. I get a very strong sense that Libras and Virgos are going to be very strong allies for you. Look to people who are Libras and look to people who are Virgos, because they're going to step up and they're going to help open doors for you and show you, you know, the path that you're on, help you kind of step out of that crossroad that you're in. So mine is a very particularly positive reading. It does warn that financially you're going to be not in the best of positions for the next year about. You're going to have some financial difficulties. That's fine. It's not going to be too major, but it's about stability. It's about you kind of not breaking out of where you're at. But it does show me that this is going to be a path that is fulfilling. It does show me that this is a path that will help you grow, and that once you break that barrier by finding your allies, by, you know, walking two paths, following your dreams while also finding some stable income, that you will break out of that stability. You'll break out of that kind of lukewarm state, and you'll be able to move towards a position that is not only financially fulfilling, but emotionally fulfilling. So don't be afraid to follow your dreams. It is going to cost you. It is going to come with some risk, but in the end, it will be worth it.
Mm-hmm. So I've got a question for you, because I want to give you some root work advice. What sign of the zodiac are you?
I'm a Libra.
A Libra, okay.
Yeah.
Well, Libras are very pleasing people, and they do well in entertainment because they are pretty. Are you a pretty person?
Yes, I don't want to be cocky, but yes. Yeah.
Well, you are
a pretty person. It's okay, I'll say it for you.
Yeah, you're pretty. Okay. So, well, that has a lot to do with why people get into entertainment. If they're not too pretty, they go on the radio, you know. Just joking. As they say, I have a face perfectly made for radio. But you want to choose unstable but fun work over stable crappy work is a false dichotomy, exactly what Ollie said. And I believe Ames pointed that out too. When you choose the bohemian lifestyle, you have to choose the ups and downs. The bohemian lifestyle means I will pursue my art, and I will take with it the risks of up and down. You have to embrace it. And love it. If you want stability, you have to embrace that. You can't find fun versus non-fun. Doc Murphy says, the bohemian lifestyle overrated after a while. Well, I don't know. I've been living it for 66 years, and I'm doing all right. But I have had times when I really have had nothing to eat but bean burritos, and I did not kick and moan about it. I went, I'm eating these bean burritos because I'm having a bohemian lifestyle moment. So you have to kind of, love what you do and do what you love. Now, I'm going to give you some root work advice. Since it was brought up that you need an ally, I want you to do some work to get that ally to you. Do you have any idea who that might be, the person who might be of help to you?
I think it's my best friend. She's a Virgo.
There you
okay.
go. Libra and Virgo.
All righty.
Yeah.
All righty.
On the head.
So anything you can do to bind her and you together, strength united is stronger, is going to help you. One way that people will work if they want to bind to somebody, and I don't mean a boyfriend now, although you can use it this way, but it can be done to bind yourself to a job or to bind yourself to a friend, is you get a popsicle stick. And you write your name on it, and a popsicle stick with your best friend's name. Now, if it was one of those old-fashioned kind of popsicle sticks that have the two sticks in one popsicle where you break it in half and each of you ate half of it, so much the better. But in any case, you're going to have two popsicle sticks, and you're going to bind them, write the names on them, bind them face-to-face, and you're going to rubber band around it, and then you're going to put them in some sugar and just turn them back and forth, like an agitator on a washing machine. And let me and so-and-so always be friends, and when she finds something good, let her share it with me. And when I find something good, let me share it with her, okay? And that is a good way to have an ally in this field. Anybody else who you want to have help you, just add them in to the popsicle sticks. Say you meet some guy named Bob, and he says, I can help you. Just put Bob in with the popsicle sticks. You end up with a big clusterfuck of popsicle sticks at the end. And this is your team. This is your friends, right? But you just keep them in sugar and turn back and forth. You can close the lid on the sugar jar and light yellow candles for crown of success. And you can also address those candles with Crown of Success oil and also with Look Me Over oil, because you want to be looked at. Entertainment is about being seen, right? And you could also put up some money drawing oil, and you could put up some maybe some Libra oil. Make a little mix of the oils that most please you and burn on those yellow candles for success. And when you burn them, you can say, now let my light shine. Let it shine outward. Let everyone see me. If you want to do a continuous spell, you can also do it with an oil lamp, and that will burn for a longer period of time. Some people prefer that. The other thing I want you to do is anybody who you meet in this business who can help you, I want you to get their business card. Do you have business cards of your own name on them?
I do.
Good. That means you can trade business cards. If you don't have a business card, you need one so that you can trade. Get a nice little business card case. You pull your business. Here's my card. Do you have one? If they have a business card, put that business card in your sugar jar. You know, that'll help you. Coastside Conjure just put in a brilliant suggestion, Cast Excelsior. And
yeah.
I don't know if you know him, but he is a root worker in L.A. Do you know who Cast Excelsior is?
No, I don't.
Okay, well, look him up, baby. Go to the Readers and Root Workers site, readersandrootworkers.org, and scroll down on the left, on the line of names, on the left is Cast, K-A-S-T, Excelsior. He is both a reader and a root worker, and he's a professional model. Okay, I'm spilling the beans on him. He's had a long career in the entertainment field. He also is a record producer. Okay?
Yep.
I'm not shitting you. That's the truth. Record producer, fashion model, reader, bone reader. And he is a root worker. His website is called Conjure House. We always call him Bone Master Ka. Okay? He's in the world you want to be in. He knows how to navigate it. Says Kali Mojo Girl. Absolutely perfect guy for you. Bone Master Ka. Okay? And I think that that might help you and also help you get an idea of how to navigate these ups and downs of financial issues. You can choose the fun career and the regular work. And as you can see, you just got to reposition your regular work so it's not crappy. Okay?
Yeah.
You want fun, stable work, and fun, unstable work, okay?
Yeah.
The only thing I would add that was a brilliant suggestion, I think that's great, just real briefly, is lodestone work. Lodestone work where you put money underneath it because you want money to come in, especially when you're in a field that may not always have a steady paycheck, per se. Lodestone work is really good to ensure that you always have money. And it can also act up as a backup source of money. So those times when you need to spend that cash, guess where it is? It's right under your lodestone. So definitely look into some lodestone work where you can also put business cards, and you can set this up right next to the wonderful sugar work that Ms. Kat recommended.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one, too. Yeah, you could even put the pair of lodestones in front of the sugar jar and work on it that way. Good idea. All righty. Well, we're going to go on to a free spell, so let's take it away, Miss Tammy Lee.
Yes, ma'am, y'all, and everyone, the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour is hosted each week by Conjurman Ali and Miss Catherine Ironwood. And we're going to go ahead and do our free spell section with Professor Ames of SkullboneEmporium.com in Fort Collins, Colorado. Turning it back over to you, Professor Ames.
It was really interesting at the beginning of the show. Conjurman Ali talked about themes that are kind of coming. You know, you do enough root work and working with different clients, you kind of see these sort of themes come along. And one that I have seen from several of my clients who are normally very vibrant, active people is just a total lack of energy, lack of motivation. Just they have plans, but they just can't get up and get them going. So I put together a bath for one of my clients who wanted to get back to the gym. And it's not somebody who's a couch potato. This is somebody who regularly used to do it and just has fallen out of the habit. So first I created a bath for him to take on Saturdays, the day of Saturn, which is really good for discipline. That seems to be his problem. And it contained Master Root, Master of the Woods, Five-Finger Grass, Solomon Seal to kind of get his mind back in the game. And then I ask him to make a tea of this the night before he gets up and takes the bath. And then before he takes the bath, slice a piece of ginger root, because you can get it in any store, a grocery store. Slice a couple of slices of that and throw that in the hot bath with it. That would give a little heat to kind of get him motivated and get him going. Now, the one that probably some of you folks are saying, well, where's the John the Conqueror root? Well, that seems an obvious one. So in addition to that, because I wanted him to be very targeted, I cooked up a little John the Conqueror root in some beeswax, busy like bees, you know, so the activity would keep going. Cooked it up. I supplemented some of the smell with a little bit of cedarwood essential oil, some patchouli, a little vetiver, so it has a sort of rich, smoky kind of smell that John the Conqueror has. And he would take that, and I pour it into a little, one of those little tins that you use for, like, you know, lip balm comes in. And for whatever he was going to work on that day, you know, rub a little on his pecs, on his biceps, on his thighs, wherever he was going to kind of focus that, just to give a little focus to his workout for that day. So I did a kind of a combination of a bath versus that overall motivation, and then specific to whatever he's going to work out. And you could even use this if you were studying or other applications. Put it along your temples, put it on your hands if you wanted to do, if you do craft or manual work. I will say, there are a little slightly easier way to do this. You might want to put a little John the Conqueror condition oil in there. Sometimes the beeswax is a little thick. So that was my recipe for him, and we're going to see how it works.
Well, that's a really good one. I'm going to just add a little thing. I put a little note on in the chat room. One of the old-fashioned ways to work with this is to use one of those ointments that comes in a metal tin. I happen to prefer black and white ointment. It's a light scent. It's very easy to use. You just scoop it out of the tin, heat it up, put the herbs in it, like you're talking about chopped up John the Conqueror root chips. Just heat it very gently. You want to use a double boiler. You do not want to fry it, right? And if you wanted to add a few drops of, I believe you mentioned patchouli or whatever essential oil you want to add, you can do that too. But you can just use the regular herbs. Let it harden and let it sit for 1 month is what I was taught. Then heat it up again gently over a double boiler and strain or filter the herbs out. And then pour it back into the tin, and it will be ready to use. And it'll look just like black and white ointment, but it is now been made into rootwork preparation. Back in the old days, people used to use regular old lard for this. Lard and beeswax will work. I had one very good student who used to melt chapstick. He would melt chapstick and add these essential oils to them, and then you know, filter and clean it all up, and then melt it back into the chapstick. Okay.
Terrific.
All right, there's our music, so we're going to turn it over to Miss Tammy Lee.
Thank you, Miss Kat and Contraman Ali, and thank you, Professor Ames of SkullBoneEmporium.com in Fort Collins, Colorado, for being our special guest member from AIR this week. We invite you to tune in next week when our special guest member from AIR, the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers, will be Miss Melanie of the CurioAndCandleShop.com in Nashville, Tennessee. And filling in for me for the first time ever will be my BFF and wonderful colleague, and y'all already know him, it's Papa Newt of PapaNewt.com. All right, and once again, y'all, we've come to the end of another Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California. You can find Miss Kat by the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com and Contraman Ali at contramanali.com and Mitch Viejo. I'm your announcer, Miss Tammy Lee, joining you from TripleCrownConja.com, Pensacola, Florida. The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour can be heard every week live on Blog Talk Radio at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And the shows are available in archive by luckymojo.com/radioshow.html. For all of us at Lucky Mojo, I'd like to thank you so much for being here and invite you to tune in once again next week at this same time when you will hear the familiar strains of the Memphis Jug Band playing the Jug Band Waltz. Thanks, everybody. Goodbye.
Good night, Miss Tammy Lee. Thank you so much, Professor Ames, for being with us. It's absolutely wonderful to have you on the show. We look forward to catching up with you and your travels through Fort Collins and into the future. Okay. Come back on the show real soon, okay?
All right. Thanks so much.
And Thank you, Conjure Man Ollie. And we will look forward to seeing you next time. Oh, boy, I don't know if y'all can hear it, but some static has got on the line like crazy. Definitely Mercury retrograde time. It sounds like the ocean is washing Miss Tammy Lee away.
Oh, no, I can't hear it.
Oh, my. And thank you, Papa Newt, who's going to take over next week in Miss Tammy Lee's place. That's going to be very fun. Black Cat said it's the NSA listening in. I'm sure it is.
All right.
Mm-hmm. A little bit up, and we'll see what hangs up after that. Good night, all.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.